We'll call to order the Stevensville Committee of the Whole meeting for Thursday, February 7th, 2019. Would the clerk please call roll?
Mayor Dooley?
Here.
Councilmember Michelson?
Here.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Here.
Councilmember Barker?
Here.
And Councilmember Phillips?
Here.
All right, thank you very much. We're here tonight to discuss the draft code of conduct. That's primarily being brought forward by Councilmember Jerry Phillips. And from there, I think we're going to let Mr. Phillips kind of present as to where we are today, and then we can kind of come up with a plan to go from there. Jerry?
Okay. I was hoping we'd have more public here to discuss this, but let's get started here. I believe this, I've got a statement here I'd like to read before we get started.
Great.
No, sure. I kind of looked ahead and kind of prepared, hoping we'd have more here, but it's not necessarily directed at any one person or anybody. So I believe this code of conduct is necessary because of what has happened in the past. There have been numerous disagreements among the leaders of the town of Stevensville. I see and hear about these issues constantly. And in light of the investigation which was concluded last year, we need some rules of decorum. I was selected to do the work, to work with the mayor to draft such a code, and the council unanimously approved this effort. I, myself, fully support this code of conduct and can say that I can live by these rules at this time. There is no hesitation on my part. And we are in this meeting tonight because we need to include everyone. I would hope that each one of us would have an open mind and do what is right. I believe that each person who serves the town of Stevensville has chosen to do so not only because he or she believes in serving the people first, but also because of love, the love for the community. Together we can make the town of Stevensville even better. Can we maintain these values that will be discussed tonight, even when our conclusions differ? It would be nice if we could agree to disagree in a respectful manner and not be casting judgment on others. I believe that serving the public is one of the highest callings a person can undertake. We need this code of conduct to show our constituents that we are unified and are working for the best interests of the town. I pledge to adhere to this code of conduct because I need to be an example to our citizens. So to get started, I would like to just go through each paragraph, and we do have it available on the screen so that we can go through each paragraph, each sentence or whatever, and discuss that and come to some consensus as what we need to do. So, Audrey, want to go ahead?
I think it's worth noting that the comments you'll see on the hard copy you have before you are from the city attorney, Brian West. He reviewed, or was asked to review, the code of conduct draft that was presented from an internal committee formed of folks within the organization. They worked on some language from the first draft. And the attorney then commented on the right-hand side. There you can see the changes that he made.
So if we go through the first page after the title page is the glossary terms. This is pretty much self-explanatory, so if you please go through that. And or you need a few minutes to go through these.
Ms. Holcomb.
Okay, thank you for doing what you were asked to do. But we have a code of ethics in our personnel policy, and I will go back to one of the problems I had with this, And it's number, I guess are these all numbered? It's number four, letter D, limited contact with town staff. Because if you go to our personnel policy and the code of ethics, they don't match. I mean, here you're telling us we can only have limited contact with town staff, but if you go by our personnel policy, it says employees will at all times interact with all elected officials, town officers, department heads, and or supervisors without being insubordinate. And I think that goes for everybody to, I mean, if you go with this code of ethics, I mean, it also says act at all times with honesty and integrity, avoid actual or apparent conflicts of interest in personal and professional relationships. I mean, everything is right here, how we should be acting. So is this going to replace this?
I have not seen that.
We have our own, in our town, in our personal policy, we already have code of ethics.
Code of the ethics, okay.
So I think to clarify, the two are supposed to complement each other.
And they don't.
Well, actually, I think that the statement in the policy does, I mean, it does say that the employees will interact with elected officials without being insubordinate. And that doesn't say that contact is limited or not limited. However, the personnel policy, the challenge we had with the personnel policy was as it's designed to apply to the employees, the staff. It's not designed to apply to all elected officials. And that's the challenge we had in the issues we've had over the recent history is applying the personnel policy onto an elected official. Ms. Barker.
As I've stated in the past, too, and I have read through what was here prior to whatever changes have been made since then, we have a state policy. I mean, I was reading it tonight on Montana Code Annotated, and Code of Ethics, Code of Conduct, everything. So to me, it seems like we're reinventing the wheel again with something that we already have, that we have to follow. And I don't know if you've read it or not, but Montana Code Annotated is something that, you know, I looked over a lot of different stuff tonight, and last night was another night. I wished I had stuff to be able to print off and bring in, because I did have stuff I made notes on. Of course, they're not with me, but.
Mr. Phillips?
And that's one of the things that I looked at real close is the Code of Ethics. The Code of Ethics, as the state has written it for the state, implies wrongful conduct, you know, such as bribes or misconduct, you know, illegal activities. So that's part of the Code of Ethics. But what we're trying to do here is have a Code of Conduct. We don't even have to call it a Code of Conduct. We can call it something else. But it's something to create decorum in our meetings and with how we react to other the staff and other people. It's not, you know, a code of ethics per se. It's some rules that we can follow that should be general to everybody, you know, just common sense rules. And I see lacking, you know, in the past years, you know, with some of the things that's been going on. It's not an ethics code. Ethics is entirely separate from what this is. So I hope I make myself clear on that.
And just to reiterate, the code of conduct is designed, this at least document was designed to more or less drive behaviors or reactions or feelings. It wasn't necessarily designed to drive whether you accepted a bribe or you accept or you take a specific action, whether that is or isn't within your duties, whereas that's more outlined in Montana Code.
That's correct.
And that was the guidance, and Mr. Michelson can likely recall, that was the guidance our city attorney gave us, was he says, yes, Montana Code does have a code of ethics, but it doesn't drive or give us any guideline as to the issues we've had in the past with more of the personnel communication type of things.
One of the things Montana Code says, Chapter 7, Local Government, Council Rules and Discipline. Council Rules and Discipline. The council may determine the rules of its proceedings, punish its members for improper conduct, and expel any member for the same by two-thirds vote of the members elected. So that's all they have in there about council rules and discipline. But I doubt that. You know, it does give the local municipality, you know, power to create their own rules. There are, you know, numerous cities around the United States that have had to adopt such a code of conduct because of some of the same problems we have been going through. I know there's one town in Alaska that just the last couple of months have put in place such a code. Now, the ones that I found, there was one in California that I picked out and used some of their part of their document. Colorado, Arizona. I took some of those samples and incorporated it into what we could use here. So that's where we're at right now. So I'm hoping that we can go through each paragraph and discuss that and decide if we need to keep that or change it or what. That's what we're here for, is to go through it and, you know, accept it as it is or change what we need to change, get something in place so that the public can say, okay, the Stevensville government is doing something to control their behavior. That's the whole idea behind it. So hopefully, you know, we can go through this and have a good discussion. I know Rob has some concerns here, and we can get to those paragraphs. We can make changes or whatever we need to do with them. So what would we like to do at this time? Should we go through it?
And start at the top, or do you want to address, does council have specific areas you'd like to just jump in and address?
I do know that this would trump this. Whatever we do here, state law trumps local law.
It does, yes.
And this is more specific than that.
Right, I can say it's more deeper.
Yes.
This is broad.
Right.
It's
right.
A broad umbrella. This is micromanaged down to.
It's not necessarily micromanagement, but what it's intended to do, while the state law applies to the entire state and has to be applied across a large, diverse group of people, this is applied to Stevensville. This is modeled for what Stevensville's needs are.
Well, yeah. We are also considered a weak mayor, too. Not that you're weak, you know, a weak mayor means a small town, one mayor.
Four councilmen.
But that's not necessarily what a weak mayor means. A weak mayor, it applies to a specific code.
Well, that's...
And a form of government.
That's what I mean, a form of government.
Right. We're a mayor commission form, executive
right.
commission.
But still under mayor.
Well, I just have this. Oh, sorry,
Ms. Holman.
It still bothers me about this limited contact with town staff, because we're saying that we should be getting along, but you're saying in here that there should be limited contact with town staff. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I used to be able to come in here and everybody and be able to talk and get information, and now it seems like we got to get permission.
Okay, the purpose of this meeting is to discuss each item, change it or delete it as we need to. That's the whole purpose of this meeting. So we start at the very beginning and work through each issue, and then we could get to your issue, Robin, and go from there.
Mr. Michelson.
I can start it out.
Okay.
Okay. It is the policy of the town of Stephenville to expect, promote, and uphold the highest protocol of conduct from its elected and appointed officials, the mayor, council members, board members, and for local government and democracy. Town staff are dedicated to promoting values, the oath of office as a council member and mayor. They agree to conduct business in accordance with the following code of conduct. A. Conduct guidelines. Elected and appointed officials have a responsibility to take the high road on conduct and to treat everyone as they would like to be treated. This code is designed to describe the manner in which all elected and appointed officials should treat one another. Town staff, constituents, and others may come into contact with while representing the town of Stephenville. Town Council adopts the code to assure that all elected and appointed officials, while exercising their office, conduct themselves in a manner that will instill public confidence and trust in the fair operations and integrity of Stephenville town government. The term members referenced throughout this code includes elected and appointed officials, town board and commission members, as well as town staff. 1. General. The professional and personal conduct of members while exercising their office must be above reproach and avoid even the appearance of impropriety. Members shall refrain from abusive conduct, displaying negative attitudes, personal charges, or verbal attacks upon character or motives of other members of council, boards, committees, commissions, staff, or the public. Members shall perform their duties in accordance with the processes and rules of order established by the town council with respect, courtesy, and integrity. Members shall support the maintenance of a positive and constructive workplace environment for its members, the mayor, town staff, and for citizens and businesses dealing with the town. Members shall conduct themselves when dealing with town employees and 2. In no way create the perception of inappropriate direction to the staff. Council or individual council members and board members shall not attempt to supersede the administration powers and duties. 2. Elected and appointed officials conduct with each other in public meetings. Elected and appointed officials are individuals with a wide variety of backgrounds, personalities, values, opinions, and goals. They all have chosen to serve the public office in order to preserve and protect the present and future of the town of Stephenville in all cases. This common goal should be acknowledged even though individuals might not agree on every issue by doing the following.
Mr. Michelson, if I can stop you just for a second, I think what if we can just cover the first couple sections that we've covered here and talk about if there's any things that council would like to discuss in those first couple sections.
Well, I think we should go with Brian West's, with our attorney's suggestions.
Okay.
First of all, I mean, he's the one that, you know, he's the one that's going to go over this, and because he's going to go over it again once
we. That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think we should follow his direction on, you know, what to delete and some of the comments.
I agree.
Ms. Barker?
Just, you know, in general, on number one, attitudes, I don't know. Brian has written, I would use caution this clause for disagreement on the policy issues. Is he talking about personal charges of verbal attacks upon the character of? Or is he talking about attitudes?
I think he's displaying of displaying
so maybe
of negative attitudes.
Maybe we need to find a different
number.
A different word for that. Maybe maybe negative conduct. Maybe
negative comments.
Well, I don't know.
Conduct sounds.
I refrain from abusive conduct.
Well, we already have abusive conduct in there.
Well, and then take out the display negative attitude and just go, members shall refrain from abusive conduct, personal charges or verbal attacks upon the character or motives. Just take that one whole thing out of there.
That clause, yeah. That would be good.
Okay. Anything else in section one under general? Okay, we'll move on to section two. Anything in section two, items A, B, C, and D? Section three.
I think Kevin.
Ms. Parker, go ahead.
Just looking at section three, number B, be fair and adequate. In allocating public hearing time for individual speakers. I think this is something that, you know, we need to make sure that we address that, because it seems like we get them up there and they don't want to quit talking. So I think it's something that needs to, and it has been, I know in some of the other, in our guidelines for public comments too, I think it's something we really need to address on.
That's why this is included.
And just so we're clear on allocating, where it talks about allocating public hearing time to individual speakers, when we're talking about being fair about that, we run into some MCA issues as well. Whereas if we're going to limit time for one person, we need to limit it from the get-go.
And I think that's something that, you know, looking at different guidelines from different cities and stuff that they have posted as well. Most of them are 10 to 15 minutes, and that's tops, and then you move on to the next speaker.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have, you know, I've heard him say, hey, we've got a timer right here, we're setting your time. So I think it's something that we really need to, if we're going to have this in here, I think it's something that we really need to make sure that we're doing that.
Did you have a comment?
Oh, no, I was just going to go to about the timer and stuff that I've seen where they have timer. And I mean, at one time we did do that, where it was only limited to, we even tried it 5 minutes, and then between 5 and 15 minutes. But I mean, to have a constant and it just starts wearing people down.
That's true. Yeah.
And I think, you know, when we have our large public hearings, where, you know, the one that comes to mind was the airport affected area, where it was so large we had to move it completely out of town because we couldn't fit all the people in any building here. And that certainly are those types of situations where we needed to limit comment down up to 5 minutes. But I think generally on our day-to-day meetings, those were seldomly does anybody hit 5 minutes, let alone 10. We have the one off here and there, but you know, that's just something to consider. Anything else in section three?
There are two paragraphs on the next page on section three.
Correct, yeah. It continues on to page five.
Mary, can I interrupt for a minute?
Yes.
Some of the comments on our Facebook, because they can't hear.
Okay.
My Facebook is what is talking fire uses.
Sure. And our heaters, if you turn the thermostat down, maybe a tad.
I think even, like you said, there's been times it's almost too echoey, so yeah. I don't know if that audio or whatever audio it is.
The problem is it's up in the corner in the next to the metal beam there, so it's bouncing around. So if we're clear and speak up a bit, the audio should be able to hear us. The thermostat on the wall, Audrey.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay.
just turn that down, and it'll kick the heat off.
Oh, yes, an 80.
Yeah.
It's been cold.
It's been cold. We're trying to keep all the heats up top. All right. If there's nothing on Section 3, we can get into Section 4. Section 4 is largely contained on page 5, but does bleed a little bit on this page 6. And anything where you see a strike-through or a new word has been added, you can assume that those changes are accepted into the document. Ms. Parker.
Number A on there, treat all staff as professionals. Clear, honest communication that respect the abilities, experiences, and dignity of each individual is expected. Poor behavior towards staff will not be tolerated. The employees of the town of Stevensville are also expected to adhere to this conduct. I think it's very important that is one that we look at. It's a two-way street, obviously. Us coming into the town hall being respected as well as you respect those. So I think that's good to have it in there. But again, make sure that it's both ways.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We do have, it's a short paragraph, but we do have a clause in here for inappropriate staff behavior and how that's handled. You can see that on page 9. It's not explicit to what type of staff behavior, but it does say, if they do not follow proper conduct in their dealings with membership or other town staff, the public or the public, then that should be referred to the mayor's office. And where you see membership used in the code of conduct, that basically is a catch-all word for pretty much anybody. Other comments on Section 4?
I still think we need to figure something out with that D. I just don't like the limited contact if we're supposed to just be getting along.
Okay, let's go ahead and discuss that right now and see if we can change that or delete it.
So to give some background to this this letter item here in the conduct, it does say limit contact with town staff, but it does go on to say that members, meaning council members or board members, have the same rights and access to information as general public, and that limitations to the staff's resources should be considered in this. They need to be considered. This isn't necessarily something that's made up just for us. The most organizations out there ask that representatives funnel their contact through certain channels, and it's not just carte blanche, you contact whatever staff member you want. And that's to help with communication throughout the organization so that everyone's aware of the information that's desired. And it's also a respect to the staff members' time and the workload that they have.
So, Robin, what's your main concern about this?
Well, because I called Hamilton and I called Missoula, mm-hmm. and they don't have limited time. I mean, limited contact. I mean, they... public officials, they could just walk in and say, I need something, and they get it, and they move on. They don't leave the office with the information, but mm-hmm. there's not limited contact with right. anybody. Okay. I mean, everybody's just working together.
Okay.
And I've never seen that in all the time I've sat on this council, that I mean, yes, we've had our issues, we had our problems. Everybody has a disagreement. But we were able to just to walk in and say, you know, we knew what folder it was in. We could just take the folder and not have to interrupt anybody and just look what we need and put the folder back. I mean, that's what we used to do.
Okay. What if we strike that limit contact with town staff? How's the rest of the paragraph sound on that? You know, we take that sentence out there.
Granted, there is time. The staff is very busy, and they don't have time for us to come in. And like I say, if I want to do research and I asked Audrey, could I get this? Audrey would say, you know, I'm really busy right now. I won't be able to do it, Bob.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
yeah.
And she has did that. And that's fine. You know, we have to respect that they're here full time. We're only here just very, very short periods of time.
Ms. Parker?
I guess the problem I have with that is that the trust factor, we're trying to work on regaining trust all the way around for each and every one of us, not just certain individuals. But not being able to go in and Audrey can say, well, it's right there. We're not going to damage or hurt anything that we're looking at because it's information that's going to help us as well. And I know she had made comment at the last meeting that we have only got one copy of them.
Right.
It's not something that we are going to damage because it is very helpful for us. But I think having that limited, and I understand the busyness because we're all busy, but she could turn around or whoever could say, it's right here. Okay, I'll sit right here in front of you or at this little desk and search what I need to. Limited, same thing with Robin, limited contact with the staff.
Yeah,
we're supposed to work as a team and...
Yeah. I think we can strike that sentence out on that.
Because what Bob was saying, we used to have a little desk where we just took it over there, right. And it was in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, granted, it wasn't me a lot because I worked full time, but, you know, if we could just, you know, if we knew what folder it was in, we could just take that folder over to that little desk, and, I mean, we're not being disruptive to anybody. They could continue to work. I mean, I don't know. I just don't feel comfortable with this one.
And I think that's an example where you're trying to access information. But I think that as the executive, we've seen instances with different elected officials on different eras of councils, just having been employed here over six years, where you know, a council member will come in and occupy an hour and a half of the chief's time to shoot the breeze. And the chief doesn't necessarily feel it's appropriate to shepherd that council member out of his office so that he can get some work done because that might be construed as disrespectful. And as the executive, I don't necessarily want the chief of police, who's making an hourly wage upwards of $30 an hour, to be shooting the breeze with a council member for an hour and a half when he's got a felony case he needs to be dealing with. And so that's why I think part of the intent behind this limiting contact with town staff, that there's a time and a place to interact with staff, and we should encourage that interaction. But there are also inappropriate types of interactions that can be detrimental to the effectiveness of the organization.
Well, then maybe that needs to be put in this.
Sure.
You know, that there is, you know, what you just said. I mean, I don't want to have to repeat all that, but... I mean, there is, but if someone was just looking at this and said, limited time with town staff, I mean, you're making it sound like,
and
sorry,
I think, and
you know, can't do that, can't do this.
Go ahead, Ms. Parker.
Sorry.
And I think that being compared to past, what has happened in the past, we're now the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to look towards the future. So I think that that's, you know, maybe that's something that, you know, we need to take into consideration. What has happened in the past may not happen now. So
one thing, you know, with everything going online on our web page, you know, the agendas, the minutes and so forth, eventually all of that's going to be online. You know, I don't know how long it's going to take, but you know, there's going to be very few instances where we're going to have to come mm-hmm. in the office because everything will be online.
In fact, we've already, I don't know if some of you have noticed, some of our resolutions are already starting to populate mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis. We get a group done, and once the resolutions are done, we'll move on to ordinances. So that's starting to get done.
So if we strike this limit contact with town staff, do we want to replace that with something or something like the mayor suggested? How would we word it?
I think from the recording and the discussion we've had, I think that I can sit down and figure out, rephrase what I said originally of the intent behind what's appropriate and inappropriate,
okay.
and come up with some verbiage mm-hmm. to put in there, and then you guys can review that.
Okay, mm-hmm. that sounds wonderful.
Okay.
Yep,
you're fine. Go ahead.
Because you're adding the general public in there as well, so they're going to think, oh, you can't even go in?
Well, what we're saying with the general public is that the council or board representatives, those folks have the same rights to access as the general public to information. And we're not saying that the council or anyone else's right to access information is any less than the general public. So that's what we're trying to explain in there, is that the access to the information is just that of a member of the public who walks in the door. And a member of the public, we would also, you know, discourage from having the same hour and a half shoot the breeze conversation with an employee. And you know, but those types of people are easier to shepherd along and say, okay, I have things to do, off you go. Whereas it's more difficult to do that with a representative of the organization. It's an uncomfortable situation for the staff. Ms. Holcomb.
I mean, there's a polite way of doing it. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Being where I work, I mean, sometimes I feel like I need a sign that says "Dear Abby." You know, I mean, they sit down and they tell me all the problems. There's a polite way of doing it. Mm-hmm. But to make this sound like limited contact with town staff, I mean, now it's just making it sound like that sounds rude to me.
And your point's been taken, so we'll scratch that verbiage and come up with something that's softer.
Thank you.
And something that kind of expounds more on what the intent is behind that paragraph.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anything else in section 4 going down?
Right after that, the limit contact with town staff. However, limitations to staff resources must be considered. Staff will make every effort to ensure that general information will be available online. Requests that may require substantial staff time must be approved by the mayor. What are you getting at with there on that one?
If a request, whether it were a public information request from a citizen or a public information request from anybody, if a staff member received that and said, holy cow, this is going to take me a few hours, or is this going to take me weeks to compile this information, that needs to be something that I authorize so we can be mindful of the resources we have.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And it may be something, you know, to expound on that, where if someone requests, you know, 3 years worth of minutes, and we go, holy cow, that's going to be a big project to pull 3 years worth of minutes together if it's years 1992 through 1995, that's going to take some substantial staff time. So the mayor, somebody may bring this to the mayor's office and say, well, they want 3 years of minutes. We may initiate a conversation that says, is there something specific in that 3 years you're looking for that might be easier to find, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I was looking to see when this water line was installed and when the council approved it. Okay, well, we know from Public Works the water line was installed in 94 in August. So we'll just give you all of August's minutes of 94 because that's a lot easier to come up with. That's the type of thing we're trying to narrow down on instead of getting these large requests of, well, I'll know it when I find it. Well, that doesn't help us, and that's kind of a waste of resource. It'd be interesting to go back to 94's minutes and see if we installed any water lines. We okay to move on to section 5?
Mm-hmm. I am.
All right.
I'm good.
Great. You can see there's been a couple of alterations there in section A and B. Ms. Barker.
On A, council members may attend any board meetings which is open to any members of the public. When attending a board meeting in a personal capacity, council members should be careful to only express personal opinions regarding the issues. Can you alliterate what you're talking about on express of the personal issues? I mean, as if you come into a board meeting, let's say I go to the airport board meeting, as just a citizen, mm-hmm. not as a
council member. We wouldn't want you to make any public comment at that airport board meeting where you say something like, well, the council and I think that.
Okay, I just wanted clarity. Yeah. I wanted clarity on that.
We don't want the council to, or a council member to obligate the entire council or to express the opinion of the entire council. If that's not the council's intent. Now, if the council takes a vote to say, Councilmember Barker, will you please attend the airport board meeting and express XYZ to them, then that's a totally different story, right? You've been given that directive by a vote of the council. But what we're reinforcing is that, you know, as a council member, you know, the council's authority lies as a body, not as an individual. And so we don't want you necessarily to express any opinions of the council as an individual that may implicate the council down the road. So it's a protection to yourselves.
Mm-hmm. How would that work as a voting member? Same way?
You mean like on the board?
Like on the planning and zoning board where a council member has a vote.
Well, then you're there as a board member. So whatever opinions you express at that point, you're expressing as a member of that board.
Okay.
Versus
as
unfortunately, in that case, if you have a personal opinion on the issue at hand, you sit on the board, you kind of lose that ability, yeah. that personal
and
opinion.
And this goes away because you're
Correct.
A member.
Yeah, so. This is just addressing when a council member attends a board meeting in a personal capacity versus in their public capacity.
Gotcha. Okay.
Anything else in section 5? We just had a chance to kind of digest a little bit. Section 6 deals with elected and appointed officials' conduct outside of public meetings. Large section B is sanctions of conduct throughout the policy. Oh, Mr. Michelson?
Yeah, on section two, where it goes down to imposition of monetary fine up to $500 and other sanctions and that, according to Montana Army Code and the personnel policy, that has to go to the county attorney, and the county attorney is the one that levies the fine, not us personally.
That applies to the Code of Ethics in Montana Code. So if you violate something in Montana Code, mm-hmm. in that Code of Ethics, then yes, that fine is imposed by the county's
system. He makes
the
determination.
Correct. When we're talking about a code of conduct, that's an internal use. It's not something that's necessarily incorporated into Montana law or anything like that. That jurisdiction stays within our own system. It doesn't, unless you explicitly say in this policy that it'll be referred to the county attorney's office, which I discourage, just because I don't know as though they necessarily appreciate that. But you have the authority to impose whatever sanctions you want in your own policies. And that goes to Brian's comment there, where he's been weighing the legal validity of those sections. It's not well supported in Montana law, but argues it could be supported by Stevensville Municipal Code. Stevensville Municipal Code arguably supports these different, Section C, Section D, and Section E, which are mandatory community service, attendance at counseling or mediation sessions, and the imposition of a monetary fine up to $500. Those are the three things that he believes could be supported by our existing municipal code.
Which, but they're not, what did you say, they're not?
They're not well supported. Brian's note here says it's not well supported in Montana law. There is some support at the national level for financial punishment and inter-branch assessments of punishments. And he gives an example there, and then he also says, but it's not well supported in Montana law. It's not something very common to do, and so I don't think he's saying that Montana law prohibits it, and he thinks that Stevensville Municipal Code would likely support those sanctions, specifically the community service, the counseling or mediation, or the imposition of a monetary fine.
I would encourage cross-reference inclusion in the council rules.
And in that, he's speaking to item F. Any other sanctions available by law, by an appropriate tribunal, and he's saying what we should do is encourage. You're right. That dotted line is crossed there. He's encouraging cross-reference inclusion of the council rules. So he's saying, council rules and this document should complement each other.
So if you censored, if let's say if the council censored me, then they would fine me up to $500.
That is an option, not a requirement. They could instead say that an informal censure is enough, or they could say we're going to censure you and ask you to do an hour of community service. If there's any combination of those things that they could do, that any body possible penalties and sanctions may include, and it's a may include, not a shall include. So it requires a council, 2/3 vote of the council to bring any of these forward or to enforce any of these. If there's an issue, the council may discuss it, or that appropriate board may discuss it and say, I think we've learned our lesson here, let's move on. It may not be a sanction, but that option is there, so that when the uncomfortable situation happens, and we have that conversation that no one really wants to have about, okay, how are we going to discipline ourselves, and how are we going to discipline one of our own, there's some guidelines in here that kind of walk us through that instead of having to make it up at that moment. Ms. Barker.
I guess if it's something, looking at the impositions of the monetary fine up to 500, if this is like a national level, I don't understand. Maybe it's something that we need to take out of here.
It's not
something that's, you know, on our lower levels, and this is just a national level. I think it's maybe something that we can strike out of there. But
I think, I think Stacy is right. You know, this would be a maximum that would be imposed.
Mm-hmm.
But as small as our community is, and I don't think, you know, the offenses that would be committed here, you know,
I don't think we need
any sanctions would be minimal, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we're dealing with just a code of conduct, you know. We're not dealing with, you know, embezzlement or something like that.
Right.
That's entirely, you know, this is just a personal attitude and, you know, how we express ourselves. So, you know, I think Stacy would be right in striking that.
Striking item E.
Yeah.
Okay. Ms. Holcomb.
Well, if that's the case, then if C, D, and E, if all three of them is not as well supported in the Montana, so I don't know if we need all three of those. I mean, if they're not being, if all three of them aren't being supported in this national level,
mm-hmm.
I don't think we need all three of them.
I don't disagree with you. However, I think that the use of community service and the use of counseling remediation sessions may be useful in addressing issues that may arise in violations of this code. And keep in mind, while Ms. Barker talked about, you know, this is the future, you know, we're talking about the future and less of what happened in the past, we don't know who will be sitting at this table in the future. And so there may be a case where the public decides to elect someone who has some anger problems, but won't admit it, and so they outlash at a member of the public in a meeting, and then the council says, you need to go sit with an anger management counselor. That's a possibility. Ms. Holcomb.
Okay, I can agree with that one, with D. But if we're not going to do the fine, I mean, I don't see, what are they going to do a community service? I mean, unless they jump out of their chair and...
Well, Public Works likes it when they go out with needle-nose pliers and pull staples out of the poles. That's the kind of community service. I'm kidding. Really.
I mean, but I can actually really see D. I mm-hmm. mean, you know, if there is an issue, I mean, it would be helpful to talk to someone in counseling or some kind of session.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. Maybe C and E could be taken out of there.
Okay.
I think when you censor somebody that's serious enough, that sends them a pretty strong message that if it happens again, then, you know, there's actions within this code. And then you go to this one, and it's just strong language in here that supersedes this.
Sure.
I would go along with the censor, but I don't think we need to put the fine or...
Ms. Barker,
who's going to pay for the counseling? I think C and D, or C and E need to be removed.
Okay.
And you're right, Bob, just to, who's going to pay for that counseling, you know, immediate, yeah, that thing.
That gets expensive.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Holcomb.
Well, I mean, we can look. I know where I work, they give you 3 sessions for free.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's paid through the company. I don't know. But I do know that if you have issues, there are 3 sessions that are free. I mean, it could be anything. I mean, it doesn't have to be somebody had an anger issue, but, you know, maybe something's going on and they need to talk to somebody.
And our employee assistance program does offer that service if you're part of our insurance pool, right? So if you purchase our insurance, then you personally can use that service. They also offer that services to those services to management. And you know, but for example, if this is sounds drastic, but it's not meant to be that way. But if a defendant comes into court for a misdemeanor violation of some kind, and the judge orders them to some sort of counseling or AA or whatever that may be, that's on the expense of the defendant. And these are designed to be helpful, but also to be deterrents, to say, you know, I'm going to keep my anger under, anger seems to be the example here, I'm going to keep that under control, because I don't really want, I know the council might send me to anger management, I don't want to pay for that. Mrs. Phillips, did you have a comment?
I would say most insurance companies will pay for 3 sessions.
Sure.
And then they also have a private line in the super where you can go for counseling if you don't got the money to do it.
There's options.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think, as an organization, I think we'd do everything we could to make sure those resources are available to whomever, mm-hmm. whether that be an employee or a council member or even, you know, anybody, a board member.
I would hope these would be the most extreme end of it.
Yeah.
Got to that.
Oh, sure. I think it completely depends on the infraction.
Right.
Because just like it just as anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Speeding ticket is probably treated differently than a DUI. Okay, so we've removed mandatory community service and the imposition of a monetary fine up to $500 from possible penalties and sanctions. Reviewing the rest of Section 2, is there any issue there that we'd like to address? Ms. Barker?
So are you going to implement, like when Brian has the, and in accordance with the Stevensville Municipal Code, are you going to include those codes like 2-119, are you going to implement that somewhere in there so that, you know, it shows you can refer to as an example, code annotated, whatever it is?
Yeah, and I think that's going to require a follow-up with Brian to find out, because what he's kind of indicated in here is that he's weighing this. He's still trying to digest how that works and the semantics mm-hmm. of that. So that's going to require a follow-up conversation with him to get some clarification in that section.
Right, because yep. I know in some of the places that we have in different parts of our ordinances, we have those.
Right, references.
Yeah, 2-2-19, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know, are these, you know, where he's referring to it as an example, are we going to have those in there? Or we just kind of, it's an example, that's it.
And I'll ask him if that's his intent, if he's trying to just demonstrate to us what he's explaining, or if his intent was to have those remarks in the actual document. I can ask him that.
I think that we should include those references in there mm-hmm. for future use.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because Brian may not be around forever. Right. You know, if we include those mm-hmm. references mm-hmm. that we referred to in the document itself, then it's there for mm-hmm. the future.
Okay. He does note in here his comment number 9 in this last paragraph of section 2 where he asks that perhaps that section be drafted to be more precise. I think what I'll do is visit with him and find out if he has any suggestion of precise language to incorporate there.
Okay.
So you could probably expect that to be modified to be more clear. Section 3 refers to board members.
I have a question going back.
Mr. Michelson?
It's probably irrelevant, but it says town staff and citizens should also point out to the mayor any perceived infractions of this code. If the mayor is the individual whose actions are being questioned,
and the matter should be briefed with the town president or the town council. I think town staff and citizens and town council should be, because it perceives to be town staff and just citizens. See what I'm getting at?
Sure. So the council...
Council should be added as, should also be added as part as, if we feel that a mayor is out of line or something, because right here it just says town staff and citizens. It leaves the council out.
And I think what it does say is, and that's where I think Brian's probably seeking more clarification throughout that paragraph, because it does say it is the responsibility of the mayor or president of the town council to initiate action if a council member's behavior may warrant sanction.
So in other words, it works both ways, is what he's saying.
Correct, yeah.
I gotcha.
And that's where he's talking about the council's authority to sanction the mayor is limited, just as the mayor's ability to sanction the council because of separation of powers.
Right.
And so he'd like some more precise or concise language in there.
Okay.
Yeah. So that paragraph's probably going to get an overhaul. But that's kind of the theme you'll see in there is a two-way street. But one branch isn't going to necessarily enforce things on another.
No.
Right.
It's just like Dan Clark said earlier this summer when we were over at the church, if you remember, that as elected officials, we're basically our own cops, our own law enforcement. I mean, mm-hmm. we basically, when one of us gets out of line, the other one has to tow us back in. Mm-hmm. If the mayor gets out, we tow him. If we get out, the mayor tells us, hey, you're out of line.
Right. In terms of conduct, yes.
Yes.
In terms of breaking the law, no, there's things that...
Oh, you know, yeah, when you break the law.
There's courts for that.
That goes above everybody's head.
Okay. Is there any remarks in Section 3? You can see Brian's remarks there. We'll cross-reference some stuff. And there's been a sentence removed there.
Do we have access to those cross-references that we can kind of see what those are? I know he's got them here.
Mm-hmm. You mean you want us to bring them up on the screen tonight?
Could you?
Can you go to the internet, Audrey, and pull up?
That 2-119. That's used a lot in this cross-reference.
No, it's actually, if you go to, it's not MCA, it's Stevensville Code, so if you just go to the website and go to Muni Code.
I don't like those temperatures.
Kind of a downer, isn't it? So the code is 2-119. I just type it into the search box and it'll pull it up. There you go. Removal of officer by counsel.
Okay. Thank you, Audrey.
And so what Brian is using here is he's saying that is the process you use if you need to remove a board member from an auxiliary board.
I think it would be smart if we use that in there so we can keep that, you know, that way that information's
sure.
right there.
Absolutely.
And I might add, you know, this here, since I'm an appointed official, that would apply to me as well. If I did something wrong, 2/3 of you could.
All of us, yeah.
Well, you're elected official. I don't think
well,
it, this
elected.
Applies.
No, yeah. We're elected.
I'm appointed. So it would apply to me only. You No, you three, it would not apply to you.
Correct.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right. Sounds like section 3 we're comfortable with. We're going to add the reference to section 2119. Section 4 deals with public disruptions. And Brian kind of questions why is this in here? However, based on some of the comment tonight on you know the interaction on public comment and that sort of thing, I think that the spirit of this probably is still important to the council to retain. Because it does, to some degree, kind of give a, if you, for lack of a better term, a protection to the council against severe disruption, right? Mm-hmm. And it gives us something to back onto to say, okay, as a chair of a meeting, this is kind of the guideline or the expectation of public.
That would fall on you.
Yeah.
So you would be the one to say point of order.
Or the chair of any, right. Or the chair of any meeting.
Right.
Could be any board meeting.
Right.
Okay. So are we okay leaving that in? We just, that would give that explanation to Brian and say that's why we want it in there?
I think that would be good because the public's going to see this. You know, they can look it up on the website or wherever. They can see it.
They have. Sure. They know what's expected of them just as much as we know what to expect.
Exactly.
Right? And he makes the same note in regard to section 5, but again, based on the conversations we've had both in this meeting and other meetings, it seems that we want to make it prevalent that it's a two-way street and that conduct is expected on all sides, all from all parties involved.
Yeah. And then just take his advice about.
Correct, his referrals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, we've narrowed this down. We're on to the last two pages here. Section C is implementation. And Brian's comment is around the term self-enforcing, where... he says the document itself is not self-enforcing, but it can express the desire that adherence by members is self-enforcing. That was the intent of the term self-enforcing, was that we govern ourselves. It's kind of a self-reporting deal.
Like I said earlier, we're basically our own.
Right. It's kind of like a speed limits in a community with no police officers, right? It's we just know to follow the speed limit. And so that's the intent. We'll likely work with him to make sure that that's clear, that it's not the document that's self-enforcing. We don't expect the document to necessarily enforce anything. Paper doesn't do that. People do, right?
So do we need to reword that then?
We could. I guess to me it was clear as to what self-enforcing meant and that the code of conduct is intended to be self-enforcing. When I read that sentence, to me, that implies that it's the people that are self-enforcing. Okay. I think what I'd like to do is put the question back on to Brian to say, what would make this clearer to you who's reading it objectively, right? Because we've all dealt with this enough and had our hands on it that we kind of know about it, but... Mm-hmm. A layperson just reading it there may be a word or two we need to insert in there that says what it does. Ms. Barker.
So what if we put self-governing instead of self-enforcing? I mean, that's still your, but it's a different
word
than that. I mean, it's, maybe that would be a little more, because self-governing
if we did this code of conduct is intended to be self-enforcing by membership, we say who's self-enforced, because I think that's Brian's issue. It's not saying, it implies that the document is self-enforcing the code. Well, it doesn't do that. It just lays on the table. I think it's asking who's going to do that. And I think if we use the word membership, that includes everyone who's incorporated into the document, to say it's self-enforced by the membership. That makes sense. Ms. Holcomb, excuse me.
No, I was just going to agree with you agree with you on that maybe you need to talk to Brian.
Find a word.
Yeah.
And just, what is it that he, what kind of a word is he looking right. for that would, yeah, and it may be that membership or, mm-hmm. or giving it to an object, right? It's missing a noun.
Yes. Oh, he mentions that.
Mm-hmm.
It's unclear.
And when we get into implementation, we talk about, you know, sections 1 through 4. Those are kind of intended to maybe be the catch-all basket of, you know, if you don't really care to sit and read the entire document or you need a quick reference, this is kind of a quick reference of, okay, here are things that, these are gentle reminders of what proper conduct does look like, what it doesn't look like. You know, we talk a lot about respect at this table, and that's delineated here. And then there's some just some questions, and sometimes when you ask yourself questions, you kind of take a step back and look at it in a different light. And so we provided those in there as well as just kind of a, you know, a nudge. Any questions on that or feedback? Is there any, you know, is there any visioning or anything like that you'd like to see in there?
Me.
Any final comments on the document as a whole? Okay, hearing none, I'll open the floor for public comment. Going once, going twice. All right, if there's nothing further on the code of conduct, I think what we'll do is we'll incorporate these modifications and clarify specifically those sections, just to review. We're removing the displaying of negative attitudes in general conduct guidelines, accepting pretty much all of Brian's remarks throughout the document, with the exception of a couple at the end. Verbiage will be clarified around contact with town staff by council members, or elected and appointed officials, rather. And we'll clarify the self-enforcement and add some references as well. And those may even come in the form of footnotes, I'm not sure, but we'll work on the formatting of that. Does council wish to schedule another COW meeting to review this, or would you like us to incorporate the changes and bring it forward to a council meeting for you to either approve or provide further feedback on? Do you need an entire night to go back through the changes, or do you think you can do it in the facilitation of a council meeting? Ms. Barker?
I think it needs to be done in another COW meeting.
Okay.
Just to make sure that everything is in order.
All right. Does the rest of the council concur?
I concur.
All right. Why don't we set a date that we can all agree on? Today is the 7th, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to meet in a month? 7th of March? Does that work?
That works.
Thursdays are okay for everybody?
Nope.
I may be leaving town that Thursday. I'm not for sure yet.
Okay.
I know I'm going to be on that Friday, but we may leave earlier than that.
Okay. Why don't we tentatively set it for the 7th?
Mm-hmm.
And if you end up being out of town, I may recontact everyone and say, okay, do you want to meet on the 7th? If you can't make it, or reschedule another meeting, that's fine. So, but we'll tentatively set it for the 7th.
Okay. I'd like to thank everyone for participating. Appreciate your input.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Okay. Is there anything further?
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah. Okay. If there's nothing else, we'll adjourn. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.